And what was this? He had a space probe on the screen. He hadn't known you could see one. Was it hostile? Like any star drone or probe, these things had a lens that was made of a light magnet. This reacted on light beams and pulled them in from a zone many miles in diameter and concentrated them, magnetically corrected for aberration, into a spot smaller than a dot on paper. In effect, it made a lens many, many miles in diameter. The problem was too much light rather than too little, and they had blinders or filters that dropped into place to keep them from burning out their receivers or recording discs should they turn toward a sun too close. In that way, one could get magnifications into the tens of trillions. One of the contractors had drilled Johnny in on command controls, and a box of these existed overhead. Johnny flipped a switch and tapped the probe's receiver and shifted the image to his own central view screen. It was their own space probe, all right. He was looking at the co-pilot and himself behind their own view screen. Yet that space probe was over 10,000 miles away. It must be at the near end of a run. Friendly, so he threw the tap off. He didn't really think anybody would attack Earth now. The peace treaty had gone in, as promised, with claws. Very, very popular. The delegates had even taken home copies of The End of Cyclo and The Death of Asart. The bank was shoveling out food loans like a waterfall. Consumer products had not yet begun to roll. That would take time. He hoped he could get at the secret of how one built a teleportation motor. That would open the door to a lot of consumer products, and even more important, keep the vehicles they had here operating. These planes wouldn't last forever.
"Take over,"
he told the French pilot, Pierre, and went back into the body of the plane. Chrissy stirred herself and unwrapped a bowl.
"I'm afraid the venison stew might be cold now."
Johnny sat down in one of the huge bucket seats. Patty was down at the back of the plane, just sitting there, looking down. It worried him. Sometimes she went for walks at night. Sometimes he could hear her in her room, crying. Because she was only 10, he had thought she would recover, but she hadn't. Mr. Tsung, he saw, was going to use this time-space to catch up with his diplomatic and social duties, for here he came with about 10 pounds of paper. Johnny put his attention on the stew. It wasn't cold.
"The week's dispatch box came in from Snatch," he said.
So that was what Dries was doing coming down from Zurich.
"Send the business matters down to the mine site office. It's their job."
"Oh, I did. These are all social and diplomatic. Invitations to weddings, banquets, christenings. Requests to address meetings."
"Well, thank them or tell them no."
"Oh, I have. We don't have any trouble. We use a vocal reader, a vocoder, and a vocal typer. We can handle correspondence in about 18,000 languages now. But this is going to get heavier."
Here it comes, thought Johnny. Mr. Tsung's elder brother had been appointed chamberlain to the court of the chief of Clan Fergus. His younger brother was busy starting up a diplomatic college in Edinburgh.
"You got another brother?"
said Johnny around a mouthful of stew.
"I am sorry that I don't,"
retorted Mr. Tsung.
"I'm talking about the nephew of Baron von Roth. He wants to apprentice as a diplomat in my office."
"Fine,"
said Johnny,